Mr. Lestrade, what are you doing here?
Oh, I accidentally stuck myself one of those damn thorns. Carl, the hallucinations, ghastly. Two poor policemen stopped me hanging myself. Anyway, when it was over, I thought I'd better look into your story. Now, Holmes, I wish you and your podgy little friend farewell. I appreciate you getting me started on the case.
Getting him started on the case? Imagine that.
It was a cold, snowy day in early December. Lack of funds had forced my old school to close. I was being sent to a new one in the middle of term. I was accustomed to the open, relaxed expanse of the country, and now I was in the heart of London at the height of the Victorian era. The streets were teeming with every activity imaginable. I was very taken by what I saw. As I stepped from my carriage, the sight of my new school filled me with fear and apprehension. Yet, I was swept with a wave of curiosity. However, nothing could prepare me for the extraordinary adventure that lay ahead, or the extraordinary individual who would change my life.
I wonder who he means.
Kermit
Welcome
Frog
to Exposition Street, celebrating geek movies. Down, kid, down! Welcome to Exposition Street, celebrating geek movies and all their splendiferous glory, a presentation of Prismatic Tsunami. Thank you very much for joining us for episode number 69 of this
nice show.
And we are very much appreciate you showing up because, you know, we come here every week or two and talk about movies that we love or love to talk about. How's that? Does that work, guys? Is that good? Did I do it right?
Yeah, that's
sure.
Working.
Okay.
Yeah,
so, I'm right accepting of that. Are we recording yet?
We are, yeah. My name is Eric. Thank you much for joining us. If you'd like to contribute in any way to the show, we very much love to hear from our beloved audience. Feedback at prismatictsunami.com is a great way to reach us, or you can drop by our Discord channel and, pop off a message or two because we'll read them. We promise. One of us will. Probably Richard. Speaking of which, let's introduce the cast. Here to affirm that the game is most definitely afoot, it's Richard.
I do love me a good induction movie.
A good induction movie. I like that. And I don't know what that means. No, that's good. you just never suspect that the overly dramatic and extraordinarily impactful mentor figure would actually turn out to be the villain. It's Vanessa.
Because that wasn't predictable at all.
Ooh, no, there's no foreshadowing there. Not to mention, it's never been done before. Never saw it coming.
Who would do that?
And he was so compellingly not evil, right? a great podcaster relies on perception, intelligence, and imagination. It's Jason.
Then what am I doing here?
Well, as long as you said it, sir, and not I. Thank you for being here, though. I appreciate it. And finally, at least the villain didn't spell his name backwards. Oh my god, he did. It's the kid.
If I spell my name backwards, it's Dick Nosedge.
That's very unfortunate, actually. Now that you mention it, appreciate that. We are talking
to use a Mario coin on that one.
Almost needs it, doesn't it? Young Sherlock Holmes. That is our movie of the hour, or an hour and 20 minutes or so. I don't know. Whatever we get out of it. Young Sherlock Holmes hit the theaters in December of 1985, so it was a Christmas-adjacent movie. It went to number 5 at the box office to $2.5 million opening weekend. Number 1, by the way, at the time was Rocky IV in its second week with $48 million. And Spies Like Us was in the number 2 slot at 8.6 in its opening weekend. So you know what? It had some deep competition. Not that it would have mattered. PG-13, runtime of 1 hour and 49 minutes. When assorted people start having inexplicable delusions that lead to their death, they start a podcast about... Oh, I'm sorry, wrong script. A teenage Sherlock Holmes decides to investigate. Did you get teenage out of that? I felt a little more advanced than teenage, but...
No, he wasn't finishing school.
He was still in school.
Yeah, I thought it was...
When do you finish finishing school, though? I don't know much about this stuff. Is that
about
a teenage
the same
thing?
Time you would get your bachelor's or associate's in American college,
which is pretty close, I guess, right? Usually around 19, 20, 21 years old, somewhere there.
See, I kind of gauged it around like 17 for him.
Yeah, so. I thought he was about 17 or so. I felt like Watson was closer to 14 or 15.
Watson right. did look young. They did a good job there. Directed by Mr. Barry Levinson, famous for such gems as Good Morning Vietnam in 1987, just a couple years after this. Rain Man, a year after that. Toys in 1992, which is a movie we should definitely talk about on this show. Wow. Written by Chris Columbus, of all people. We've seen Chris's stuff on the show before. He did Gremlins in 1984, one of his early flicks. Goonies in 85, same year this came out. And, of course, Sir Arthur
that
Conan
explains
Doyle.
It.
Oh, yeah, and Chris Columbus has... Does he have... I think he has some Harry Potter on
yeah,
him somewhere.
Yeah, he was the director on the first couple Harry Potter.
Yeah, he's got some shtick, you know? He's got something going for him. Sir Arthur Conan Doyle also got a credit for the characters. They couldn't say, wrote the book, because, you know, it clearly wasn't based on a book.
No.
Which they told you before and after the film, just to make sure you totally understood this was not
Which
a
I really
legitimate
appreciated,
Holmes
actually.
This is
I appreciate that.
And this is a fantasy.
Because this was even before the internet age where people would have picked that shit apart like crazy anyway. I mean, this was just them just being cool about it, I think.
This
what
was
this
fanfic.
Is the big screen equivalent of fan fiction, yes.
Before that was really
what
a thing.
That
now we get a lot of that.
A lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is 100% fanfic.
Music by Bruce Broughton, who did Lost in Space, So I Married an Axe Murderer, The Monster Squad, you know, all the movies that we didn't really talk about the music much in. So there you go. Starring Mr. Nicholas Rowe, don't know, Sherlock Holmes. This guy was in almost nothing I knew. He was in Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels in 1998. I have no idea what role he played. Was in Seed of Chucky in 2004, much to his dismay, I'm sure. And Mr. Alan Cox is John Watson. I have nothing to say. He is the son of actor Brian Cox, I think. That's about it.
And
Brian
cast
Cox
is
awesome.
Sold it. So basically, what I'm hearing is this movie did not have a lot of star-making power.
Let's just say $18 million budget I haven't mentioned yet didn't go to the pocketbooks of the stars. There you go. Sophie Ward played Elizabeth Hardy. The only credit that I absolutely felt compelled to mention, because it's an awesome credit, is she was Mombi 2 in Return to Oz in 1985.
Really?
Wow. Lots of makeup on that
that's
one.
That's a pull.
Yeah, it is. And we all know how some of us feel about Return to Oz.
Twitch.
Jason, get off the floor. We're going to need you for this show.
I love this.
Yeah, I know you did. We have that happen sometimes, though. Sometimes there's ones that somebody in the cast just absolutely
I
adores,
get it.
And somebody else twitches in fear.
Yeah, it's usually Eric and me, and not the other two. But
yeah, there is an unfortunate
fair,
amount of that
of the movies,
because I love everything, and you trigger easily.
I've got a hair trigger. It's okay.
No, it's actually a really good thing to have on the show, as we've talked about, though, too. I did wonder about this one because it had some interesting visuals. rounding out the cast, Anthony Higgins played Professor Wrath, whatever. He was in Raiders of the Lost Ark, 1981. He was in The Bride in 1985. That's about it. And Freddie Jones, who's always worth mentioning, Chester Cragwith. He played Thufir Hawat in Dune in the 1984 version. He played Ynir in Kroll. We saw him recently, the year before that. That's everybody. Unless you guys saw anybody else in the cast you really want to talk about, that's everybody I had really written down. Because there were other people with credits, but I didn't know any of them. And I feel like a failure.
I didn't know any of these
Considering
people.
Considering in IMDb, half of them, their picture is from this movie, I'm pretty sure they didn't star in many other
things. It does say something, doesn't it? As I mentioned, a budget of $18 million, made $2.5 million the opening weekend, $19.7 million gross in the U.S. and worldwide.
Oh, so, Henry Winkler was a producer?
Yeah, that was actually where he started. I think it was his first production that he was a producer on. So.
Oh, yeah, I remember seeing that.
Hey. So,
yeah, yep, that's the one. That's the Winkler. So, one interesting thing to note is this is the first theatrical movie to have a completely CGI character. The knight emerging from the stained glass window to attack the priest. ILM animated him, and John Lasseter oversaw it. Very early movie gift credit for Pixar there. The knight took Industrial Lights of Magic 4 months to create.
That's still fast, considering the time frame.
Well, it's funny, too, because what was the one thing, when we talked about this movie beforehand, that any of us who had actually seen the movie could remember?
The knight.
Hey, that was literally all I could remember of this movie after however many decades it's been.
Although,
was that one scene.
So, after a week, I had forgotten that until you said something, so
not this is different impressive brain, now. Gotcha.
Impressively enough, in 3D art, one of the hardest thing is the more polygons you need to make a thing, the harder it is and the more complicated it is to create it. So curved surfaces are the devil when it comes to that. Not so much in 2022 as it was in way back. Yeah, exactly. So here we are with a creature that is made from panes of stained glass, which are all flat surfaces. That probably helped a lot.
It definitely was a memorable effect, though.
I didn't realize that. For some reason, I missed that.
It was if you watched it live. I understand watching it now for the first time, you just go, oh, and it...
It's like, oh, that's an effect. I think in 85, it would have blown me away because I'm like, how in the world did it do that?
Do we feel like it held up? I mean,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It was a pretty good effect, wasn't it?
Like, it seemed like a decent enough effect. I just
forgot. I did not notice it.
It doesn't necessarily stand out in today's landscape as
it
amazing.
It wasn't life-changing this point.
Yeah. But it was a more impressive special effect than many of the other effects in this movie were.
It didn't stick out as a trash effect.
It was more special. Probably was more money spent on it than
the little dragons and the coat rag. Yeah,
crew? What?
See, I like practical effects, so a lot of that in the tickled
well,
me.
A lot of the stuff they're talking about though, like the little like the moving creatures and stuff though, obviously what were they, claymation or something? I mean
were stop motion of some kind.
Yeah, motion.
Probably.
I mean that's really indicative of the time and it's fine. I think I mean obviously the 80s was the end of the era where practical effects were needed for everything. And it was so important for filmmakers to be super creative. To come up with ways to make it work. So, I mean, yeah, it's easy to admire that. And the nice thing about practical is they always fit because they're real. You're filming real things happening. You know, you don't have to worry about whether or not the CGI looks like it was a cartoon made on the side. But I thought that was interesting, though, because I was surprised to find that ILM was actually doing anything that early.
Oh, yeah. I knew they were still doing stuff that early. And
anybody
other than
Lucas, I know. Yeah, I remember I watched a really great, it's been a couple years now, so I didn't remember the details, but a really great documentary about Industrial Lights and Magic that was amazing. I went over the whole history of them and how they really got, you know, started and then how they got the legs, you know, and it's fascinating watching if you're listening and you're interested. It was up on Prime, it probably still is, but I don't know what it was called, unfortunately.
I would read a lot of articles about them back in the day.
So one bit of trivia I thought was funny is fake snow that was used during filming killed some of the grass at Oxford where they were doing the filming. Executive producer Steven Spielberg reimbursed the university for the cost of its replacement.
That's going green.
That was nice of him.
Like you do. And Nicholas Rowe plays plays Sherlock Holmes again in Mr. Holmes, 2015 movie starring Ian McKellen as a aged Sherlock. And I never actually saw the movie, but I understand it was really good. I always meant to. He was in a brief scene as the real Holmes watches a film with himself as the lead character played by Rowe as a younger man. So in a way, he was again playing young Sherlock Holmes.
Just not as young Sherlock Holmes.
But in 2015, he obviously was, yeah, it was, who's 20 years older. 30 years older, excuse me. Jeez.
I was about to say, it'd been more than that.
Where's the time go? Millennial math is hard.
In that scene, the on-screen Holmes character talks about a poison that causes hallucinations, just like Rowe himself frequently did in this film as a younger Holmes. So, not too much of a stretch, I guess, for trivia. That's kind of all I got, though. So, I knew the effects would be something that would kind of draw the eye, so to speak, because there was a lot of it. With all the hallucinations and everything, there was just a lot of it. But I... For the most part, I didn't find that any of it broke me out of it.
Mm-mm. But yeah, no, it was...
I always enjoyed this film, though, and I don't feel like it really suffered much from time, for whatever reason. It's not amazing or anything. I just always kind of enjoyed it. Now, I will say that having stuff come back to mind while I'm watching it and remembering it and taking the time to pull clips and trying to find clips because... Let me tell you what, this show is British. It's a little dry. I can play you most of the clips right now. That's most of them right there. It's like, you know, so.
I mean, to be fair, that's clips in any movie. It's going to be people talking.
I do get a lot of that, don't I? But, you know, I like more dynamic talking, so it's kind of a funny problem to have.
It's the rebels, that's sir. Fair. They're here.
I did get a kick of all I did I did get a kick out of all the little in references, like the deer stalker hat and the pipe and stuff like that. I thought that was kind of fun.
Yeah,
some of that's probably been set up in canon already in Doyle's stories about, you know, where those things came from.
Not as much as you might think, however. A lot of those were affectations that were actually added by later authors as the whole Sherlock Holmes legacy outgrew its origins.
Okay. Also, the violin. I love the violin, fact that he was, yes, squawking on the violin at the beginning of the movie.
That is actually a apropos reference to canon material. Also, there was no mention of his drug habit, which would also have been canon and appropriate.
But probably not at this age. I could see them not thinking
they need to. A little young for a drug habit.
I have to say, and I talked about it a little bit when we did the Sherlock Holmes movie with Downey Jr. in it. But the violin thing is so vital to the legend of Sherlock Holmes for me because it's one of the things that got me into playing the violin when I was a kid. Which was a huge turning point for me personally. I remember when I got into playing the violin, my dad telling me that Sherlock Holmes was a violinist. And that was a big deal. So,
it was, however, still pretty cool to hear him playing the violin poorly.
Poorly, yes. How long have you been playing? 4 days.
I should have mastered it by now.
And I loved that because, you know, it really does come down to the heart of the fact. As a musician, kid, you know.
Oh, yes.
You cannot intellectualize your way into mastery of a musical instrument. I don't care
what kind of savant you are. No one masters the violin in 4 days. No one. It doesn't happen.
There's shit you just got to make your body learn to do, and it's not that easy.
But... anyone who hadn't tried it could be forgiven for thinking that they would be able to master it.
Yeah, maybe. And now, you know, if it would have been young Sherlock Holmes in the 1980s, it would have been a guitar instead of a violin, right? So, there you go. I got nothing, guys. You got anything else? Anything else you guys want to bring up? You watched the movie? I know you guys watched it like a week ago because we had a delay of game on this, you know, flag on the play right at the beginning last week.
One thing I had been going to comment on, interestingly, was that although the effects and the more unnatural elements that came from the drugs, I did not find immersion breaking. There was what I refer to as the Indiana Jones sequence, which did threaten my immersion to some degree, simply because of how it didn't feel like something appropriate to a Sherlock Holmes movie to me.
Which is interesting. I always know you're going to pull up, you know, things that clash against the fiction, the origin stuff. And that would have been something I would have asked about, actually, yeah. I did catch Indiana a little Jones bit of the sequence? This. I thought you guys might enjoy this. I even called it Indy Jones. Takes you right back to the Temple of Doom, right?
Yes, that makes me feel better because the fact that I wasn't the only person who got that pull.
Good stuff. Also, the drug, the hallucinogen. I mean, I loved that as a plot point. I remember some of the things when I watched this when I was younger. Some of the things that the hallucinations, you know, were characterized were kind of disturbing to me for different reasons. Particularly like the food thing with
lots of chicken. Where he got attacked by his cooked food. And the pastries. Oh, the pastries,
yes. And it's just disturbing.
I mean,
stuff.
I've had days like that.
The chicken was visceral and frightening. The cream puff pastries and such were just comical.
Laughable, yeah. Which was fine. Yeah.
The chicken was terrifying, though.
The chicken was terrifying.
I can't 100% agree on the cream puffs, however, because there was a weird, almost kind of uncanny valley effect for me that made it just disturbing. I realize
they
that's
were happy
normally,
to be stuffing him.
That's normally applied to things that seem human rather than things that seem like edibles. But in this case, I feel like it's an appropriate borrow.
Eat me. I liked the sequence. Let's see, I've got it actually. It was in there when, since we're talking about the hallucinations, Holmes.
Please don't cry, Mother. Please. Don't you understand, Mother? Can't you hear me? Can't you hear what I'm saying? Mother!
This is all your fault, son. How could you do such a thing to me? To your own father. Spying on me.
Forgive me, Father. Please, I didn't realize.
My private life is my own. Your mother need never have known.
Father.
A little bit of, like, extreme subtext, you know?
Yeah.
And it was a little dark, but I loved the kind of the dramatic quality of it. You know, the way we're exploring Holmes, who is going to turn out to be a relatively sociopathic genius, exploring the pathos that kind of got him there, got him started. And I don't know if there's anything related to canon in any way in his parents and their situation, but
not that I was able to recall.
But I thought that was good writing. It was not particularly fun to watch, but I thought it was good writing.
Right. I agree with that.
Doing clips. Let's back up just a little bit. Magic trick. I like this one.
How's it done? Is it some sort of magic trick?
No magic, Watson. Pure and simple deduction. The name tag on your mattress reads J. Watson. I selected the most common name that begins with J. James or John. That would have been my second choice.
Of course.
Your particular style of shoes are not made in the city. I've only encountered them once before during a brief visit to the north of England. The middle finger of your left hand is indented with a callus, a trademark of a writer. And you were carrying the Hunter's Encyclopedia of Disease, a handbook not available to the general public, only to practicing physicians.
That stuff is always cool. Very Holmesian.
Yes.
Yeah, it's all set up. Lestrade. Now, the clip that played in the opening of this... I had this issue with the fact that Lestrade kept saving them. Anybody else notice that? Just me? Okay. Lestrade.
I believe I'm onto something.
Oh, not again.
This time I'm certain of it.
Really? Just like last month when you were convinced that the French ambassador had embezzled £300,000 from the Bank of England.
I was close. It was the Russian ambassador.
Oh, Holmes, please. I don't have time for any more of your playpen crimes.
Just have a quick look at these.
A suicide? A carriage accident?
I suspect foul play.
Why? The two incidents are completely unrelated.
Wrong.
Both men graduated from the same university in 1809.
Coincidence.
Neither of their deaths fit their personalities. According to his obituary, Bobster was a happy man, content with his life, his career, his family. Why would he commit suicide? He didn't even leave a note. And Reverend Nesbitt is described by friends as warm, loving, peaceful. And yet the carriage driver insists that he was crazed, insane, in a state of panic when he ran out into the street.
Holmes.
Is Lestrade in Holmes' canon a contentious figure? Kid.
I was going to say, I don't think I can field that appropriately simply because the character never made enough of an impression on me that this many years from reading them, I feel like I remember him at all.
He's a common character to see embroiled in adaptations. You always see somebody playing.
In the Sherlocks I'm familiar with, which is the BBC Sherlock and CBS's Elementary, Lestrade is contentious but appreciative. There's a weird respect / annoyance relationship.
No, in Elementary, just out of curiosity, are you thinking about the local cop played by Aidan Quinn or the actual Lestrade in the episodes he showed up in briefly and when they were across the pond?
I was thinking of Aidan Quinn.
Which I think is the analog, right? I mean, that's right. What it's supposed right. to be. And that's a really good example because he is familiar with Sherlock's failings and inadequacies and the danger of having him involved with the police force, but super into his deductive capabilities as a detective. So that's a good show, by the way. I don't know if you guys ever watched that, but it's great. Lucy Liu is Watson. It's great.
What's catching me off guard here is I've for some reason got this weird block where it comes to any Sherlock Holmes storylines, maybe because you know how I get weird with overexposure to anything. And I'm thinking about some of the things we're talking about, and I'm like, I enjoy this from the series Psych, because you talk about picking up those clues and whatever like that. Psych literally focused on that and used some of the same themes. Absolutely adored that to pieces.
But the tone of the series was more lighthearted.
Which might be part of my thing.
Yeah, no version I've seen of Sherlock that's really serious about it is got a lighthearted tone at all. I mean, there's an adventurous quality to him that I think is really kind of fun to see come out. And there's a little bit of that here. He would get excited about something when it happened, you know. But you watch the more mature Holmesian analogs from nowadays, and there's a darkness there that just it suffuses the whole tone of the show. I like that.
Maybe
you know?
That's the thing I struggle against.
Yeah, and it was there with the Downey stuff too, with the movies.
Yeah,
in a different way, but still there. Yeah. Let's see. Poison.
The care to preserve poison.
Holmes went on to explain that the Ramitet were a fanatical group of religious followers of Osiris, the Egyptian god of the dead. They were scorned by society because of their distortion of traditional religious beliefs and their violent and sadistic rituals. The Ramitet use a blowpipe and shoot a thorn into their chosen victim. The thorn is dipped into a solution made up of various plant and root extracts. When this solution enters the bloodstream, it causes the victim to experience very realistic, nightmare-like hallucinations.
But we can be certain of one thing.
What's that?
The murderer is still here. On school grounds.
Oh dear, that's quite a rash statement, considering that this said jingling sound has been heard only once.
Twice.
Ooh. Somebody look up who the narrator is. He's got such a great voice.
I recognize that voice, but I could not identify it.
Maybe I did, however, heard him other places, yeah.
I was going to say, I did want to point out that I believe what we just heard was a character being interrupted in his exposition by a narrator who then proceeded to exposit all over the exposition that was originally supposed to come from the character.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Interesting point. It seems rather, well, I mean, it's obviously intentional, so it seems rather like he was trying to condense the explanation or make it contextually relevant?
I'm curious if that was the way it was written in the original script, or if that was a result of them needing to
change that
shrink.
Up.
Yeah.
Michael Hordern is old Watson.
Do we know him from anywhere? Can you see anything in there?
No, I'm pulling it up.
Yeah. But I could see that.
I don't recognize the name.
I could see it being on purpose if it was because Holmes would have to do the exposition entirely in the Holmes meandering style, and the narrator was allowed to cut it short and to the point.
I thought Watson was always the narrator.
No, yeah, that's correct. Watson is always the narrator. He's the one who writes the actual novels. But no, I was referring to the fact that the narrator interrupted a character in a scene to replace their exposition. Which
is funny, because like when we're talking about Elementary, Johnny Lee Miller is constantly going off on his Sherlockian schlock, you know, and you're just along for the ride.
Yeah.
Sherlock.
What I recognize this guy from is he voices the wise man in Labyrinth.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Ooh.
The wise man?
I recognize at least. Yeah, the guy that has the chicken.
I was wondering if that's who you're talking about. Please leave a donation. Yeah, that the that guy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's him.
And as soon as I saw it, I was like, yep, that's the same guy.
You are that guy, yeah.
Or you're not getting more humor out of him today.
I had heard his voice somewhere, but I literally could never have guessed where I had heard it.
Probably more out there. It's not important. I just was.
He's
in
a few Paddingtons. He has a voice credit on Lord of the Rings.
He did a voice as a narrator for Paddington Bear.
The voice. That is the voice.
Oh my God.
I don't recognize that one. I didn't do Paddington, but.
Wow.
I figured that was worth a mention.
Because now you can hear it.
Yeah.
Paddington, you know that. Even if it wasn't him, all of it. Somebody with that same sort of staid, sort of British kind of delivery. I love it. Let's see. Pyramids.
We discovered an underground pyramid. The ancient tombs of 5 Egyptian princesses. We removed all the relics and treasures. Preparing to send them to England. But... insect. Place needs good cleaning. There was an uproar. All the villagers in the area were convinced we desecrated sacred ground. Our lives were in danger. The British sent the troops in. Several people were killed. The entire village was burned to the ground.
Who's that? Freddie Jones. I like him. He's got a certain way about him that's kind of fun to listen to. Let's see. I've only got a couple left. Saved Again. Nope, I already played that one. That was the intro. That's where Lestrade saves him again. And Detective.
Holmes, wait. I know why the bear's white.
And why is that, Watson?
Well, the only room with an all-southern view will be on the North Pole. It's a polar bear.
Bravo, Watson. Have the makings of a great detective.
As I watched Holmes settle into his seat, a sudden feeling came over me that I would most certainly be seeing him again. So ended my first adventure with Mr. Sherlock Holmes.
Nice. You know, I...
Chekhov's bear puzzle?
That was the... What?
Chekhov's bear puzzle?
Chekhov's bear puzzle? I really enjoyed that element of this story, though. The whole point of this script was that sort of like, let's imagine who Sherlock Holmes and Watson were before they were Sherlock Holmes and Watson, which has, you know, gone on to fuel the entire, like, I don't know, DC CW universe, but. Really, I feel like here it played out in a pleasant and adventurous way that I found satisfying. Again, movie's not new, so is what it is. Now, I would be really curious to hear what you guys think. This is going to be the shortest episode we've done in a while, guys. Unless you drag this out, obviously. That's up to you guys. Rich,
it's going to be a short episode.
Think?
I'm, jeez. All right. So my thumbs down.
Well, not if he talks like that a lot.
Oddly enough, and this is a me thing. This is totally my thumbs down. I own it. I, for some reason, cannot click with the Sherlock Holmes universe. And maybe it is. It's that pervading lack of humor that gets to me. Possibly. Yeah. I enjoy that aspect of Doctor Who. I enjoy that aspect of Psych. I enjoy those types of things. I used to watch Murder, She Wrote.
Now that was a great show. Come on.
Angela Lansbury.
Everywhere she goes, people die. The woman was amazeballs. She could sniff them out before they happened.
But I would never invite her to tea.
Please. Yeah. I would actually be hesitant to invite Angela Lansbury to tea, all things considered.
Oh, well, maybe at this point. however, so I'm throwing my thumbs down in.
And that is a Sherlock Holmes story.
Just a Sherlock Holmes story. Just does not click with me. I know I can't be the only one. I might be the only one. I don't know. Holmes would surely tell me in the most drawn out way possible. Speaking of, thumbs up. The effects were comfortable. I did not notice the effects. And actually, I had to be reminded here again that it was an 80s movie. Now that I know that ILM was involved in a small piece of it. It makes sense, but yeah, that's a budget eater.
Spielberg produced it, so yeah. You know, I mean, he had some clout there when it came to making.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And always has. So I'm definitely gonna rock it in for the effects. There were some good moments. There was some good stuff in there. I enjoyed some of the wit in that. So while I'm not going to say I enjoyed the movie, I am going to go ahead and punch it in. I'm not mad I watched it. I'm going to punch it in at 3.5 stars.
Oh, okay. 1.5 stars. Okay.
I'm going to go ahead and punch it in at 1/4 star. No.
Boy, you really liked that. Those effects, didn't you? Let's see. appreciate it, Rich. That was very good. Very lightning. Really good read. I got nothing. Vanessa?
Honestly, thumbs down. My only thumbs down was like the drug trips with the food. I didn't like the chicken attacking the guy. That was terrifying.
It's just uncomfortable, wasn't it?
I thought it was imaginative. Yes.
It was uncomfortable back then, too. You know, it's
like starting the movie with that immediately put me in a weird headspace for like the first 15 minutes.
They did start off rough, didn't they?
It was
right out of the gate. It's like they
right
just
out the
unapologetically
gate, demon chicken attacking a guy
right up the old keister. Yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't mean that. Yeah.
And yeah. It honestly, pastries like shoving themselves into people, that's terrifying also. it looked funner. It did look funner.
The pastries appear to be
still
having fun.
Terrifying. So, didn't like the foods attacking people. That was my big problem with it. That being said, I loved the music, I loved the acting, I loved the story. Everything else I loved, I would still give this overall 4.
Nice. Like I said, I jive with that. I feel like it was a pleasant film, you know. Jason, your rebuttal.
Hello. I really don't have that much to say about the in my usual ranty ways.
That's legit.
It was a movie I remember from childhood, and again, mainly the things that I remembered was the Glass Knight and the effects, because mm-hmm. they were top notch for what they were, and I really felt they held up. I was appreciative of how well the base movie held up as a film 40 some odd years later.
Yeah.
it did a really good job. And I enjoyed the story as a detective-y type story. They gave you enough information to kind of get an idea, but not so much information that they just beat you over the head with it. And I appreciate that. My only problem was the pacing. It was a very British film.
Yes.
A lot of Sebastian moving matchsticks to the left. It was slow, and it was quiet, and then there would be stuff happening, rah, 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 and then it would be slow.
Oh, quiet again, yeah.
And it would be quiet, and you'd start to get... It was hard not to get distracted by the cobweb in the corner, or the shadow of the fan on the wall, and it was hard to want to stick with it. But while I did stick with it, it was enjoyable. I don't have many problems. I'm gonna give it a good solid 3.
Okay. I didn't think to ask that when we were talking about the show, is how the mystery kind of held up, because they in a style. And kid, you'd have to tell me how typical this is with Holmes stories, but they gave us a lot of information up front because we knew that the poison and the hallucinations were all tied together and stuff as viewers.
That's but, actually not a typical thing from
And I was trying to remember
because Conan Doyle's
the classic image in a home story is that he's sitting in on Baker Street, and somebody comes in with a case. In my head, that's the way it worked.
Like
so,
crime,
more often than that, or
crime noir.
Somebody would come in with a problem or something, and he would see a case in it. Is that accurate?
That is affirmative.
So. The mystery itself, though, I mean, and Jason and I have talked about this, gone around and around and stuff with, like, mysteries in other movies, because I've seen Jason get pretty riled up about
Agatha Christie, where
they don't give you all the information you need to try to figure out what's going on. They withhold some right. vital piece of information.
They barely explain it at the end.
I do want to actually addendum that just a little bit, because remember, in the original stories... They are written from Watson's point of view, literally his journal entries describing the events. So they don't so much tend to start as, someone coming into Holmes's office like some kind of...
film noir.
Oh, what is it called?
Crime noir.
Film noir, kind of. But rather, they do tend to start by presenting the overview of what's, the mystery... And then Holmes's procedural investigation and deduction, event by event, that leads to the final conclusion.
Okay. It's been so long since I've read any Sherlock Holmes, but
likewise,
that tracks, but... yeah. That makes sense, though. And there was always kind of a feel of Watson trying to kind of telling the story, threading it out, you know. And in a movie, it makes sense to give you scenes that unload some of that up front. So, I mean, I thought that was fine. I just thought it was interesting that there were elements that you could try to figure out, but I didn't feel a strong impetus to try to figure it out. And I was curious how the mystery itself unfolded for you guys. But
liked it.
3 stars from Jason. It's good. Kid?
Oh, dear. Okay, so...
You knew this day would come.
If you were to pull my 1986 self here and ask me to go ahead and review this movie, I would answer thusly. Thumbs down, no Professor Moriarty. Thumbs up, Sherlock Holmes, 5 stars.
In credit
scene. There was a Moriarty.
Well, I will point out that when I watched this movie in 1985 or 86 in the theater, I did not, in fact...
have the chance to wait
for the credits
and see any after credit scene. And therefore, I never knew there was an after credit scene until last week. But all of that being said, having the chance to sit down and watch the movie at this point with a much more critical mind, there were a surprising amount of things in the movie that not only did I not remember, but I think I would have not been even vaguely aware of when I watched the movie the first time anyways. Like I alluded to earlier, I found the Indiana Jones scene the closest thing to immersion breaking in the entire movie, simply because of how it did not feel to me like a Sherlock Holmes event. Especially the culmination of the innocent young woman being drowned in boiling paraffin right in front of the protagonist's eyes. That was awful. But it was also very... I don't know, just scene-breaking for me somehow. Knowing I had seen the movie once, I just kind of expected that we were going to see him come up with some way to save the young woman before she could be horrifically murdered, and when that didn't happen, I felt kind of betrayed. That being said, though, I really would have a hard time pinning anything other than that as a legitimate thumbs down. There were some elements that were a little out of place, or that felt a little too, I don't know if derivative is the word I want to go for, but almost too forced. But I wouldn't categorize those as legitimate thumbs downs, because they didn't actually disturb me so much as I would have liked to see them handled a little bit differently or flavored a little bit differently. Thumbs up is simply and spectacularly that this movie was a very obvious loving tribute to the work of the original author and the character he created and his legacy, which is something I can wholeheartedly endorse, because even though I'm no longer the absolute fanatic for Sherlock Holmes that I was in my youth, I still vastly appreciate the character. I give this movie 4.5 stars.
That's actually about where I land too, Rich. 4.5. I think I wanted to give it 5 stars going in and realized that it just didn't compel me to by the end. But I still enjoyed the movie, so.
And that ends up rolling up to an average of 4 stars overall. So, you know, it's a Sherlock Holmes homage. It's a tribute. It's a good movie. It's good enough. And yeah, if you have any enjoyment in Holmes, you should probably check it out at least once.
One of the strange things about doing a show program like this is that we're covering, although we're doing a lot of genre flicks and stuff, we are covering a very broad platform in terms of what kind of stories are being told, what kind of movies are being made. And if you were to, I mean, and you obviously could, find other movies that we rated at 4 stars, how ridiculously different a group is that?
R.I.P.D.
I mean, how divergent? R.I.P.D. Oh, that's an interesting
Sneakers.
One. A Richard favorite.
The Prophecy.
Sneakers actually has something a little more in common with this, I think, because there's that element of the kind of the intrigue in it, and it's a paced story, and it has a lot of like movement between scene and scene and scene. Yeah, it does.
Three Musketeers, though. You're talking about that.
Paced humor. The Disney Three Musketeers, which again, yeah,
and Stardust, and
Adventure. But you notice that a lot of those are movies that have were trying to give it a more epic feel or something.
Oh,
and the movies are just good. They're just fun or whatever.
Willow clocked in at 4. That was the first one we rated.
Wow. Willow. Did you guys see the trailer yet for the new series?
Uh-uh.
I didn't know they had a trailer yet.
Nope. Yeah.
I'm avoiding stuff the way I usually do until it starts.
D23, Disney premiered trailers for a lot of the stuff coming out the next year, and the Willow trailer gave me goosebumps. And Willow was in it, and so is Saoirse. Everybody else was new. So,
Goosebumps was horror, and Willow was fantasy.
It's closer horror to comedy, adjacent. Actually.
And
not helping.
Well, that was comedy adjacent. So there you go. There we go. I'm excited. I'm always excited about new great fantasy, though. You know, I want it to be epic. I want it to be fun. I want it to be adventurous. I may get what I want. Who knows?
We'll see.
Okay. Well, what have we got coming up in the next slot here for our little program, Miss Vanessa?
Oh. Ooh, Zachary
Levi. And now for something completely different.
Right. Shazam. I love it. That'll be a fun one.
I think even though
it's very actiony. Oh, you haven't.
Oh, dude.
Even though it's very actiony, it has so much comedy and stuff, it's going to be easy to pull good clips from. I think it'll be a fun movie to talk about.
You're going to tear it apart.
Somebody watch Shazam. That'll be good. And with Black Adam on the horizon, it's kind of even topical, timely, if you will.
Say it again.
Black Adam on the horizon? That's what we do.